on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Hope you're feeling well and bearing up under the strains of the current day events. And welcome to another edition of the Orient Hour. Now, as it was last week, what we've done is we've got a show that's pretty much already recorded by Billy and the team. They spoke, of course, to Nigel Travis yesterday and asked plenty of questions, which Nigel answered. So we'll be playing that in its entirety shortly. So it's sort of, once again, a show within a show, if you like. And I'm sure you understand, under the restrictions at the moment, we can't have numerous people in the studio. So we're working our way around that one. And our thanks once again to Billy, to Steve Tung, Jamie Stripe, and of course, Luke Lamborn at Orient for making that show possible yesterday. And also, good news, last week we did mention get well soon to Simon Feldman, and good news was that Simon's come out of hospital and is recovering back in his rest home, and we wish him and his family all the very best there. And we'll have some news for you soon about a quiz that we're launching, and that will be played out as an Orient Hour Extra, and you'll be very welcome to take part in that, of course, and we'll give you some details about that. But hopefully Martin Strong is working hard getting the questions ready on the Great Orient Quiz, and we'll have a bit of fun during February and during March with that, and hopefully you'll all take part. Now, in the meantime, then, we're going to pass over to Billy Herring and team for the Orient Hour for this week. Take it away, Billy.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Orient Hour. Today, I am joined by my normal guest, Jamie Stripe. Jamie, how are you?
I'm all right, thanks, Billy.
And the fantastic Steve Tong. Steve, how does this week find you?
Okay, just about got over the despondency of last Saturday. Bit miserable by about 5:30 last Saturday, but slowly getting over it.
Weren't we all, I think? Yeah, I mean, the day started with such high hopes, and as ever is the Orient way, ended in dismay, shall we say. And I don't think it would be the Orient if it was any different, would it? So we never do anything easy. All right, let's go on to that game then. So we lost 1-0 to Forest Green Rovers. Let's start at the beginning. It was the same starting lineup as last weekend. Jamie, do you think this was the right thing to do? Do you think Ross should have made any changes?
I think it was the right thing to do. You know, changing the winning side after a decent result the previous week. You know, you want to keep that continuity, don't you? You want to keep that run going and the same personnel. I just think we sort of ground to a bit of a halt, didn't we, really? I mean, we never looked like imposing ourselves throughout that game. I think Forest Green came with a game plan. They came on the back of a bad result, I think, against Tranmere. And they actually looked quite a decent side. I think they changed to a 4-4-2, and I think they'd done their homework on us and nullified our threat early on. But they were in control of that first half, you know, more or less from the off.
Steve?
Yes, and what they did very well, I think, you're absolutely right, they'd done their homework. I think they'd watched us the way we knocked the ball around the back four, and we got a bit complacent about that because, of course, against Morecambe previous game, Morecambe were just happy to let us do that all afternoon.
Yeah.
Dan Happy and Tunji Akinola were actually bringing the ball forward over the halfway line. But when we got the ball anywhere in the back four, they were closing us down really well. And it was as if we weren't used to that. And under pressure, we didn't cope with that particularly well at all.
Do you think that this is where Ross's experience comes into play? So did he need to change in-game tactically, do we think?
It's quite strange looking at Ross. He very, very rarely changes the formation at all, doesn't he? He more or less changes the players to the formation and not the other way around. I think sometimes when we haven't got our starting 11, especially with Johnson missing, it's a problem. We have square pegs in round holes, and I think we've mentioned that before. Obviously, Johnson's a massive miss for us. And Angle, I thought, did okay, apart from one chance. He had a really good run into the box. He made a big chance for himself. And whereas probably Danny Johnson would have shot across the keeper, he hit wildly behind for a goal kick for the opposition.
Does he hit it? I mean, when I watched it initially, I was like, oh, come on, got to show more composure. But when I've seen it again, it almost looked like he slipped as he went to hit it.
Well, quite possibly, because he was getting into their box at a fair old lick and he was under pressure. So he probably kind of, not panicked a bit, but maybe rushed his shot, took a little bit, not as much time as you should have done. But, you know, it's just one of those things, really, where you think, you know, maybe if we'd have played Brophy on the left instead of Sotirio, it might have done better for us. But obviously, he likes playing Brophy in that wing-back role for the time being.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it was a fantastic pass by Joby McEnough in the first half to Connor Wilkinson, which opened up the Forest Green Rovers defence completely. Steve, do you think we should have had a penalty there? Because to me, it looked like a foul.
Very close. He certainly stumbled as he shot, didn't he? And he might well claim that because of that, he just didn't get enough power on it. I mean, a bit more power on it, rather like the goal, of course, that he scored at Forest Green right at the start of the season coming in from the right. A bit more power on that shot, it would have beaten the defender who was able to clear it. The players didn't protest that strongly, but there was a nudge. And that he stumbled, and the combination of the two meant that the chance had gone. But it was a wonderful pass from Joby, as you say, best pass of the day. But other than that and the angle chance you've mentioned, there was a header by Dan Happy that brought a decent save from the corner, and that was about it, wasn't it?
Yeah,
we really seemed to lack creativity, didn't we? And, you know, obviously we brought the subs on, and unfortunately they weren't able to make an impact. I mean, we also think that the pitch might be playing against us a little bit at the moment with the state of the pitch the way it is. Not digging out the ground staff in any way, shape or form, obviously, just making an observation more than anything else. What do we think?
I just think that the situation with the pitch has been ongoing since we had the massive West End redevelopment about 15, 16 years ago, because there's obviously an issue. I mean, I'm going back even to the 2006 promotion. I mean, I can remember it breaking up pretty badly back then. So, yeah, I think if you're obviously operating on the right-hand side, out by the west side, it's tricky. It's tricky enough as it is. Although in saying that, I thought Wagstaff and Forest Green seemed to get on all right there because he had a very good game in the first half and he set up a couple of chances. So I don't know. I think you're right about the pitch, but I don't think really we've got enough quality on that side of the pitch in depth anyway to utilise it to its full potential.
Steve?
Yes, you felt a bit sorry for Nick Freeman when he came on, and as Ross said, almost his first touch in front of the Justin Edinburgh there, you looked at him and thought he was looking up and saying, what's this about? But we shouldn't make too much of it, probably, and we don't want it to become a mental thing. I mean, Raul Sotirio, actually, I thought, did a bit better in the first half, playing down that left side, than he had done in the previous game.
Lee Angle that was created, he looked really sharp, didn't he? Broke away and then the ball went to Lee Angle.
That's right, and a good advantage played by the ref. But the problem with both substitutes, of course, was almost as soon as they came on, Dan Happy committed what I thought was a silly second tackle once he'd already been booked, and no real argument about a red card for the two yellows. And so it became very difficult for Freeman, and Dan Kemp disappointingly didn't get in the game at all, did he? Which he'd done very well in his previous little cameo. So very hard for them, 10 men against a decent side. And by the end, I quite liked the idea that Connor was pushed up the middle, but he wasn't able to make anything of that. And by the end, you know, once you send Josh Coulson up the middle to centre forward, then it's real desperation stakes, isn't it? And we weren't going to get the break from that.
No. Yeah, and it's only going to go one way, isn't it, when you've got Coulson up front. So, I mean, on that then, you know, we'll talk about the Dan Happy red card in a little bit. But on that, with regards to the forward line, obviously we touched a lot last week on Royce Soteriou and his fitness and his performances. How do we think he did? Do we think he did better this week than last week? Do we think he justified his start?
Yeah, I think he justified his start. I thought, like Steve said, I thought he was a little bit better in the first half. I just think he's better off as an out-and-out striker at the moment. I think if you're going to, you know, swap light for light, if Johnson's injured, you put Soteriou in, because we know that Wilkinson likes playing on the right. But it looks like we could see Wilko starting at centre-forward at Bolton on Saturday. So it remains to be seen where we play Soteriou then. But I think he just needs games. I think the guy's just crying out for running the team.
What would you do, Steve? Would you put Soteriou down the middle and leave Wilkinson on the right-hand side? Or would you put Connor in the middle?
No, I think Soteriou goes down the middle and Connor did look much happier on the right. The only other real option for wide right then is Nick Freeman, and they may not think he's ready to come straight in and in that position as well. So I would have thought Connor would be on the right against one of his old clubs, apparently, wasn't it, Bolton? He did have a little spell at Bolton. Through the middle, which he deserves, to be honest. I mean, Rule hasn't been all that well treated. I've heard people say, well, you know, he should be lucky he's getting in the team and he's getting a game and he has to make the most of it. Of course, that's true. But he deserves a little run in what, as you say, is his best and, let's be fair, his proper position. And then we come to who plays on the left, and will he finally put James Brophy up there and give Widdowson a game, or would he start Dan Kemp? I wouldn't mind either, but I do wonder about Joe Widdowson. I mean, if you're Joe Widdowson sitting there now and you're just not getting on the pitch at all, as the transfer window, the end of it gets nearer and nearer, you must wonder what your future is there. So I'd be very happy with either of those, either Kemp or Brophy, wide left, really.
I suppose the big decision for Ross, obviously, you know, when you look at the back four, does he want to, obviously, Dan Happy's not going to be playing in the next two games anyway, so he's going to have to bring in one player. Does he disrupt the back four by bringing in two different players? So he brings in Coulson and Widdowson, or does he just bring in Coulson to accommodate the obviously Dan Happy's suspension? You know, so therefore he's only moving one person rather than two. You know, or does he bring in Jamie Turley? Does Jamie Turley then get another go in the first team? What do we think about that?
I think he'll bring Coulson in, I think, and he'll only make one change to that back four. And we'll see Kemp playing on the left on Saturday. I'm not sure Turley's that much game time. I know Coulson's not had much game time, but I think Coulson's had a little bit more than Turley.
Sure.
And he might be seen as a safer bet. So I should think that there'll just be that one change in the defence, and we'll see more of Kemp. And about time too. I think it's about time we've seen him start a game.
Is that what you would do then, Jamie? Would you do that? Or would you personally prefer to see Widdowson at left back?
I'd stick to it. Now we're playing with Brophy at left back, we might as well see it out. Now, the thing I would say, and I know Steve mentioned about the transfer window and maybe Winston making a move, we've still got a lot of games to play and there's going to be injury and suspension. I don't think we should look to turf too many people out of the club at this moment in time, because it's still a lot of games, a lot of football to be played, a lot of injuries could be had, and I still think Joe could play a part.
OK. All right, well, let's hear from Dave Victor, and he was speaking to Matt Hiscock after the game.
Well, Matt, it was disappointing, wasn't it, against Forest Green?
Disappointing result.
without doubt. And maybe a reality check. Sometimes you need them throughout the season. There's a long, long way to go, and I think everyone approaching this game would have known that. But it's a game of football where the O's have come out second best and obviously picked up nothing.
No, the referee, you know, there were some decisions he definitely got wrong, but I think there was no complaints about the two yellow cards that led to the dismissal of Dan Happy.
Yeah, no doubt about that decision. Obviously, the second one being the one which forced Dan Happy to leave the pitch. I felt there was a big shout for a penalty in the first half, Connor Wilkinson. And maybe, again, Connor Wilkinson, he tried to stay on his feet. You just wonder if he'd have gone to ground, whether the referee would have been forced into giving Orient a penalty. And sometimes those moments are absolutely key. At that stage, it was 0-0, obviously. But, yeah, disappointing afternoon from that perspective. And obviously for Dan Happy, who will have no complaints about the decision. We saw that when he made his way down the tunnel, and it's the second time he's seen red this season.
Just the one goal in it, and from an Orient perspective, it was a bad goal, wasn't it?
Yeah, no doubt about it. Disappointing goal to concede, an individual error, and Orient were made to pay for it. I have to say, I thought Forest Green were good value for the 3 points on the afternoon, and that's made based on the fact Orient just didn't test the goalkeeper enough. He had a very quiet afternoon, Lewis Thomas. There wasn't enough shots for him to save. There wasn't enough attacking play from the O's, and they found life very difficult today against, full credit to them, a very good Forest Green side.
Are you surprised that the team that beat Morecambe, that, you know, the side that beat Morecambe that finished that game, didn't start today?
I wasn't surprised, because I know Ross Embleton likes to keep a winning side. So to answer the question, no. There would have been one or two questions asked, maybe whether Dan Kemp should have been given an opportunity, came off the bench. Found it very difficult, of course, particularly with his teammates down to 10 men, but... Yeah, I think Ross Embleton, as we know, he likes to keep a winning side. There may be one or two changes now for next weekend, particularly, of course, with Lee Angle having to come off injured.
Yes, I think that was the hamstring, but a different hamstring, we understand. Difficult circumstances for Nick Freeman to make his debut.
Yeah, again, similar to Dan Kemp, difficult because at the time they came on to the game, immediately Dan Happy was shown the second yellow card, and then all of a sudden you're playing against a decent side who are moving the ball. They'd come on to make a positive impact. In the end, they were having to do a lot of their play in their own half. So difficult for them, but they'll have opportunities. And I think Nick Freeman in particular, again, good to see the O's doing some business in the week. Hopefully he can give them that little bit extra to make sure the O's continue to push on in the second half of the season.
Just like Dan Kemp, he's played at a decent level. He was very much involved in Wick and Wanderers' promotion into the Championship, of course, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's a massive positive for me. I think first thing I always look at whenever Orient bring someone into the club is, number one, are they fit and healthy? Are they ready to go? Are they sharp? Which, of course, he is. But secondly, look at the pedigree. How many games has he played? I think he made 34 appearances last season. He's been playing this year in the Championship. So he's going to be a valuable asset. There's no doubt about that. Dan Kemp as well. Pleased to see him put pen to paper. And I think this is where Orient in particular, at this moment in time, the business, the transfer activity is so important if they're going to push on and be successful.
And Ross said there may be another, and that might be a defender.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I think, again, you look at the positions and what's available out there. I felt perhaps this afternoon when you looked at the bench, of course, when Leanne Gold did come off, there wasn't really an out-and-out centre-forward. Real Sotiriou came inside, but there wasn't too many options, and that's why he was forced to bring on Josh Coulson at the end. So that might be another area that the O's look at. But, of course, we all hope Danny Johnson, of course, returns to fitness as soon as possible.
We've had that run of games at home. Next up is Bolton Wanderers, who have struggled, really, haven't they?
Yeah, really interesting their season so far. I mean, there's no doubt about it. They've got a powerhouse up top with Owen Doyle and Nathan Dilfinesso, but at the back, they're leaking goals left, right and centre. And yet again this afternoon, they recorded a defeat, this time at the hands of Tranmere. You do feel they've got a good attacking side, but defensively, there's certainly questions, and I'm looking forward to next weekend.
So am I. Thanks very much, Matt.
Okay, so thank you, Dave. Appreciate that. Thank you, Matt, very much. All right. Interesting what we're saying there. Potentially another defender coming in, despite the fact that, you know, obviously this time last week we were all saying we might need to add another defender to our ranks. Now I'm sitting here thinking, do we actually need to add another striker in? Obviously, it seems as though DJ is going to be a few weeks away. Leanne Gold coming off injured as well with a hamstring. Do we need another defender now, or do we need to add a striker? What do we think, Steve?
tricky one. There's almost a sort of bit of a Sod's Law aspect to all this, isn't there? That just when you think you've got a balance of a squad right, I mean, in some ways we've had too many strikers in the sense of too many centre forwards, and of course we only play with one, and then suddenly we're down to what Harry Redknapp used to call the bare bones. I think we mentioned Jamie Turley a little earlier. I will be very surprised if we see Jamie Turley again at the club, and I suspect maybe they've had that in mind, and that's one of the reasons why they're thinking about another defender. The other one we're not very sure about is Jordan Thomas, who just hasn't had the game time recently and seemed to pop up playing for Norwich under-23s again last week, I believe. Whether that was just because he wasn't getting any game time, I don't know. So I would have expected a defender to come in, and unless they've had a very bad prognosis about Lee Angle's injury and think it's really going to be a long time, it would be more of a surprise. I mean, we'll talk to Nigel Travis about the financial aspect of the transfer windows and the summer as well. But we've got to be pretty careful about the money and getting new players in, especially if it's going to be a sort of short term. If it was an attacker, I would have very much expected to be a loan, which might come a lot cheaper. But I would have thought they're probably sticking to their plan. It sounded very much as if Ross actually had a defender lined up, sure, knew exactly who he was going to get. And you would have thought that will be the next announcement.
Obviously, last year we had Keziah Sterling on loan, and he never sort of managed to get any game time because the season got cancelled. I don't know whether he's on loan at another club this year, but is it the sort of thing that maybe we look to do something like that again? What do we think, Jamie?
I think it'd be a good idea. We don't know how long Johnson's going to be out for. Angle's hamstring didn't look the greatest after Saturday's game. I just think we just need a little bit of insurance in that position. You know, all of a sudden we've gone from having four or five options up front to maybe one or two. You know, if Wilkinson or Satiru gets a knock, then we're starting with Louis Dennis at number nine. So, you know, I think we just need a little bit of insurance in that position.
Steve?
I'd almost forgotten about Louis Dennis. got his chance again and just didn't make any impression again, did he? I mean, one of those who, again, at the start of the transfer window, you might be saying, is he still going to be here by, what is it? It's the end of the 1st of February, I think, because this weekend falls. The actual deadline is Monday night, isn't it? But you were thinking, you know, is Louis Dennis still going to be with us? Presumably now, just because of what we've been talking about, there's every chance that he will stay on. But just one more of those, a bit like JMD, I thought, who's had his chances, let's be honest, and even if they're as substitutes mainly, just hasn't taken the chances.
Almost become the forgotten man, hasn't he? You know, I definitely think there's a player in there, but just are we playing to his strengths? Are we playing him in the right position, do you think?
I don't think we've seen enough of him really to know what his best position is, really. I mean, it doesn't start many games, comes on as an impact sub. I think his best moment, I think, came at Port Vale, didn't he? Remember that game? And I think he set one of the goals up for Danny Johnson, I think. So it's a difficult one, isn't it? I mean, when, like you said, like JMD, when he's had a chance to really cement the place in the side, never really done it. So,
yeah, absolutely, yeah. And this seems to be the problem with the squad when you look at it. Some of the fringe players are not necessarily taking their opportunities, shall we say. You know, obviously, JMD's gone out on loan, but do we think we'll see any other departures at all then in this window? Ross didn't seem to think that there would be many going out. But what do you think, Steve? Do you think he's just playing cards a bit close to his chest?
The one I've been looking at is James Dayton, who, again, just has, when was the last time we saw him on the pitch? And another one who, sadly, having not let us down in the past, has just not taken his opportunities this season. Again, we never quite know whether he's regarded as a wide player or one of those inside positions. If we are going to struggle for forward players, perhaps that's a reason that he might stay on. But again, at the start of the transfer window, he was one of those who I was looking at and again thinking, will he still be here on the 1st of February?
All right. Well, we will move on from Forest Green Rovers because we now have the guest that we've all been waiting to hear from. Obviously, you don't want to hear from us anymore. So we'd like to welcome our very special guest tonight, Nigel Travis. Nigel, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. I'm like everyone else, struggling through the pandemic. I think we've actually got more freedom over here in Boston than you have in London. So I can go out the house without being restricted. In fact, they pulled back some of the restrictions here, so we're in good shape.
Excellent. Good to hear. Glad to hear it. Steve, I'm going to pass over to you because I know you've got some topics straight away to go in with.
Yes, Nigel, last time we heard from you, which was probably the end of the year review online, you were talking about a possible link up with an American or even Australian club. And you've announced that this week with Hartford in Connecticut. Tell us a bit more about that and the benefits which you hope it'll bring.
Okay, so it's kind of a strange one. About a mile and a half away from me is a college called Babson, which is well known for being about entrepreneurialism. And they asked me to do a podcast about football. And they wanted to compare the US and the UK. And I did it with Ross. And it was a good podcast, very successful. And the other club on there was Hartford United. So I got to know their owner. We talked. And then, as most fans know, I've been quite interested in the future of artificial pitches. And I went down there, spent some time because they got the most advanced one in the US. So we talked about a partnership, and over the last few weeks, we've been comparing our P&Ls in great detail, and we decided to announce it. I think the benefits, Steve, are that if any of our fans go to New York, Boston, or anywhere in America, and they can prove they're Leighton Orient fans, they can go and see Hartford for nothing, and vice versa, because we obviously want to extend our reach. Also, we agreed to cooperate as much as we could on the football side. And their new head coach has just been announced. He comes from West Ham. And he actually had a phone call with Ross today and may come to training in the near future. And then this may be one-way traffic, but we can't bring Americans to England, but Americans can come here. And they've had a relationship which still goes on with Southampton. So we could send players on loan to Hartford because each USL club gets 7 international visas a year. And then the last big benefit is we see it as a way of helping our sponsors do even more if they're interested in America. And we've already had one sponsor write to me and we've connected them at Hartford. And there's another one as well looking at doing it. So the whole idea is to have reciprocal arrangements for the benefit of both clubs in a totally non-competitive, hopefully a fun, enjoyable way, but with no great demands on either side.
Right. And how has COVID affected the football over there? It delayed the new season there?
Yeah, I mean, the MLS, just to explain, the MLS is kind of like the top tier in America, as then the USL, and that has 3 levels. Unlike our leagues, you can't get promoted or relegated. And the fans of the Orient now will be amazed at a question I get a lot. We understand in England you can go up and down. How does that work? They're really shocked by it. But the USL has these 3 tiers, but you can't get relegated or promoted. But the USL Championship, which is what they're in, they're in that league. They played with no crowds like we have until, I think, October, and they're coming back on a delayed start probably in May.
Right. And you say their players can't come here at all?
No, there is immigration rules in the UK. There is a hope that post-Brexit, which obviously we're in now, that there will be a free trade agreement with the US, and the rumours are that that may be freed up. And I tell you, a question I get every single week is, I know Johnny is a great footballer. Can he come to London? No, because of the immigration rules. So I think that will take 2 or 3 years to change, but it could be a benefit for us. I mean, we've already got, I won't say which player, we've already identified a player or two who could benefit from playing in Hartford in the summer.
And possibly our younger players who you think would benefit from going over there?
Yeah, and the ones we've identified are exactly in that category.
No, just having just what sort of standard equivalent would you say Harford are playing into the English leagues?
Tough to say. And to be brutally honest, I've not seen them play. But I would think it's probably League Two, National League. It's not that far away from us.
The manager sounds an interesting guy, Harry Watling, because he's worked at academies in London, hasn't he?
Yeah, he worked for West Ham. And one of the reasons we suggested he go and see Ross is, you know, Ross has got a lot of academy experience, as you guys know. And he's had to make the change of going and being firstly the first team coach and then the head coach. And that, I think the biggest change is handling difficult older players and also all the selection difficulties that you have to go through. And I think Ross, if he was on the show, would tell you it's a learning curve. You learn as you go. And he's trying to pass on some of the things he's learned from his time to Harry.
Well, we've got some topics on the message board for you, Nigel, if you don't mind, if we can move on to that. So we'll start with a nice easy one and we'll ease you in as it goes. So Ronnie Hot Dogs has said, as a fan, who is your favourite current player?
Well, I try not to have favourites because I'm the chairman, but I'll say I've got a few. I think Lawrence is the best goalkeeper I've seen in some time. And he's an interesting individual as well, so he'd be up there. James Brophy and I kid him about his lack of a right foot. So by the way, he did kick the ball with his right foot out of the penalty area the other week, and I sent him a note congratulating him on the progress. So I like him a lot. I mean, Joby, I know Joby so well now, I regard him as a friend. So he's obviously one. And a number of players have stayed at the house. I mean, because we try and do, in normal times, this trip where we have a few players over every summer. Craig Clay, I'll never forget, got lost running around here. Josh Colson had a really interesting experience at the baseball game. So I've got a lot of favourite players but I have to try and stand back from it because sometimes in football you have to make tough decisions.
And I was going to say that will be my difficult question coming up for you then. With sort of 20 players that are out of contract then, and see some of those players that you've mentioned there being the ones that are out of contract, how difficult is that going to make this summer for us?
Well, I think to phrase it this summer is wrong.
Okay.
We have a process which I think is getting better, where we have this transfer committee. And I think I've shared it before. It's made up of me, Kent, Matt Poulter, Ross, Martin Ling, and Joe Austin, who's the analyst. And by the way, you should have him on the show sometime because he does an unbelievable job. He's really bright. And we used to say in America, America runs on Duncan. I think Leighton Orient runs on video because he has so many stats and videos of people. So we meet regularly, and at the moment we're meeting every week, and we identified players way out. Sometimes people fall on your lap, but we identify who we want, what we want, and for next year we identified right at the start of the season that as we evolve the squad, we want to be League One capable. So the players have to be capable of playing in League One. Obviously, there's a lot of analysis in that. As an element of subjectivity, but that's how we will make the decisions. We try and do it on pure performance, and I do read all the stuff, and there's a lot of nonsense written about it, but we try and make informed decisions. But the great thing we do is, because it's not just down to Martin and Ross, and we all have an input, even though they're obviously the experts in football, we challenge them, question them, and we even make them fill in sheets full of data so that we think through every aspect of a player. So I think it's a pretty sophisticated process and getting better.
Would you say, though, that 20 players is a lot to be out of contract at any one time, or do you think that's just the way that things are going within the current climate?
Well, I think that's a good point. I think that is the way it's going. I mean, a lot of clubs last year had a lot more out of contract than we did. We probably had too many in contract, to be honest. And we're talking to several players about renewing contracts. And then we've got another group that we'll talk to a little bit later. And obviously there's going to be a few players that don't meet the cut. But one of the things I'm most proud of, we try and handle people as nicely and as well as we can. And we've encouraged some people to go out on loan because we want them to get jobs, because it's going to be a difficult job market. And I would say, and I haven't actually seen this written anywhere, it's going to be a very difficult job market if you're age 21, 22, because the salary cap works in a way that people under 21 don't count against the cap. Right. So if you're 19 or 20 and you haven't hit the 21 on whatever it is, January the 1st, you're in good shape this year. But the 21, 22s, and I think one of the reasons we got Dan Kemp is he was smart. He could have probably got more money staying on loan at Blackpool, but he wanted to secure his future, and that he was a smart young man. So that was helpful to us. But it's quite a difficult process. And I think what Martin's trying to do is to move to a situation where we don't have as many with contracts as last year, and we don't leave ourselves with no one like the year we started.
So it's finding that middle ground.
Yeah. And it's, you know, if players do well, they then feel that they can sometimes do better and go to other clubs. So it's not as easy as, hey, here's a contract for another 2 years. They sometimes think they could go to League One and Championship. And as you say, it's a fast-changing environment with the salary cap. And obviously COVID's made it even more complicated. So it's a bit difficult to predict the future for players and for clubs.
Jamie, coming over to you.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask Nigel, do you think the season will get to be finished as it stands, or will Leagues 1 and 2 need another bailout from somewhere to get it done?
Okay, so there's two questions there. I'm going to answer them separately. I think the season will finish. We were on a League 2 call last week, and Rick Parry, chairman of the league, said it very vociferously that we will finish the season and do everything we can to do that. And so did Trevor Birch, the CEO of the league. So I think that's true. But it's interesting, with Carlisle's game being called off today, Tuesday, when we're recording this, I was calculating it earlier today. They've got to play 25 games in 95 days. So there's going to be a lot of teams with a lot of football to play and more postponements. I mean, today, two or three games got called off in the last two or three hours.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to make it difficult, but I'm pretty convinced we will finish the season. I do think other clubs, not us, will need a bailout at the end of the season. And I've said that to the league, because I think when you get down to April, May, and remember the season effectively goes to June. So I think there will be need for another bailout. And I think that's not only our view, it's other clubs' view.
Do you think that will be forthcoming?
This is a very complicated question. I'll try and simplify it. The Premier League, and I'll repeat what I've said publicly, I think the Premier League have been put in a really dreadful situation by the government of having to help bail us out when they've got their own problems. They've lost 700 million this year. I think what will happen is there's a 15 million that can be used for grants or loans. That's what the debate is about now. Discussions will go on, and I'm optimistic that something will happen.
Steve, coming across to you.
Yeah, Nigel, there's I think on the message boards, quite a lot of sympathy, to be fair, for the financial predicament that every club finds itself in. And people are asking about the effect on this transfer window and on the summer. Have you really had to change your plans and rein things back in a bit because of the extra losses which you've mentioned in the past?
Very short answer, Steve. No. I mean, we affected. Okay, this is where it gets complicated. And there is the salary cap and there's our own budget. This year, they are kind of different. As the salary cap moves down the road, they will come together. Because this year, anyone who was earning a lot of money was put into the salary cap at 62,500. So that means that certain clubs who've got players on 4,000 or 5,000 a week, which is true, they still only go in at 62,500 per year, even though their salary's well in advance of that. That is only going to happen for this year. So the salary cap and the budget will come closer together. And the philosophy we've taken this year is, and we got, to be honest, quite a lot of headroom in the salary cap, is if we need a player to help us push on, we're going to find them. And Nick Freeman was one of those in that category that we identified we needed a midfield player through the process I mentioned earlier. And Nick, who was obviously in the Championship, was not on our original list, but he came on the scene and we feel we've got an excellent signing for the balance of the year. And he's not only League One capable, he's probably League One capable plus. So that's the way that happened. But we've not cut back at all on it, and I'm too much of a fan to do that.
With regards to the Nick Freeman signing, Minesweep here from the message board has said that I know it may seem cynical, but there will be clubs in serious trouble come the summer. So could this lead to value of players going down? So isn't playing a waiting game the prudent thing to do?
Yeah, I think that's a very good assessment, and Martin, who is pretty wise on these things, thinks the waiting game in each transfer window is a very good way of looking at it, because situations change every week in clubs, and you can often get the bargains at the end of the window. And I think that's sometimes obvious by what happens even in the Premier League. So we're trying to balance it out. We've got players that we want to stay. I won't name them. They're probably obvious to you. We've got players who we've offered contracts to and we're in negotiations. And we'll do everything we can to get them in. But yes, there will be a lot of players out of work in the summer. There'll be, I think, some bargains. And I think potentially there'll be a lot of people who are earning salary that may have to take cuts to their current level of 25%, even higher percent. So the waiting game does make sense. You just need to balance it out.
Do you ever feel pressure from fans when you're playing the waiting game? Because obviously, I'm sure that every time there's a tweet go out or anything like that, you have people commenting underneath, make a sign-in, announce the sign-in. Does that ever affect, not your decision-making process, but does it ever put more pressure upon you?
Not really. I think we put more pressure on ourselves. I mean, I've said this to you guys before. This may be a plus or a minus. I'm a fan. I mean, you know, but my desires are exactly the same as yours. And I want Leighton Orient to be in Division One, which we think is the right place for Leighton Orient to be. So, and I think we've got great opportunity this year. It's an odd year and we intend to take advantage of it. So we probably put more pressure on ourselves than from you. I mean, I've always said I read all the comments. Some of it's nonsense, some of it's great. So you just have to take it, and people should have their opinions.
With regards to that, we've got a question here from Prestige Worldwide, on the message board. Why do you think some fans are so opposed to the men you have put in charge of the club, despite our progression each year?
Good question. I don't know. People have personal views. I mean, it's interesting, as I think you all know, I'm Leighton Orient's number one, but my second team is the Miami Dolphins, and I'm a fan there, and I criticise... as fans do, what they sometimes do. They're actually doing a pretty good job at the moment. But, I mean, we chose Martin Ling. Let's start with, if you like, what a lot of fans write about. We chose Martin Ling because he knew the club. He's someone we trusted. He's someone with a lot of knowledge. We also thought he could be extremely helpful given his experience, not only to the head coach, but everyone in the club. And we wanted someone to run what is a much bigger job than fans remember. Yeah. I mean, fans think his job is going out, signing players, deciding whether Ross is the right or wrong manager, and that's it. It isn't. I mean, I had a call with him this morning. It was about summer camps. He's also in charge of the college program. He's also in charge of the academy. And these are all important parts of the club. And becoming more important because one of the ramifications of the salary cap is that we will have to do a better job training and developing players for the future. So the academy becomes more important. Our scouting becomes more important. Our analysis becomes important. And Martin looks after all that. So that's point one. Secondly, people also forget this. We're in America. Kent's in America. I'm in America. Rich, another board member, is in America. I haven't been to the UK since the end of February.
Sure.
What would I do without people I trust in Martin and Danny? And yeah, sure. Am I loyal? I may be loyal to a fault, but I'd rather have that loyalty and get the consistency. And as you say, we've improved every year.
Steve Tong, over to you.
Yeah, Nigel, that Martin on the end of the year review was very honest about the actual figures and having to lose, I think he said, 600,000 off the wage bill. I keep coming back to that figure and it frightens me. I don't know what it does to you. Is that really a realistic and an achievable figure, which we have to do, don't we?
We have to do it. So, I mean, I sometimes read that the board hasn't invested in the club. So let's just stay on the playing side. That means we're paying this year 600,000 above the salary cap. So that is a realistic number. And obviously that means that we have to make choices going back to the earlier question for next year. But by the way, we're not alone. Every club has to do that. I mean, and that's why certain clubs, again, I won't name them, but you can guess them because we played them recently. Certain clubs are desperate to get out of this League Two this year, because next year is going to be even more difficult.
Yes, I know you keep up with the comings and goings over here, I'm sure. You probably noticed that Crawley, who are right up there with us, had sold their leading scorer to Cardiff City, and Forest Green, who we played at the weekend, had sold their captain. Is that an example of how others are having to cut their cloth?
Totally, and... obviously, you know, we made a decision to let Jordan go to Crawley. He can't play against us because he's on loan. But one of the other interesting parts, and, you know, I've now been doing this for, 3.5 years, is you have to try and separate your personal relationships. I mean, both Josh and Jordan, I really like as people. Sorry to see them go, but, you know, you have to make the decision. I'm pleased they both seem to have ended up in a good spot for them, which is good, but it won't stop us being highly competitive against Crawley. But it is a demonstration that I think a lot of clubs, when they get a big offer, have to sell. And we will do everything we can not to sell. But just to show you how we think things through, guys, at the start of the window, in case we got any offers, we sat down and agreed what the price of each player that we could get an offer for might be. Because the worst thing is, you know, if you've got no idea what they're worth and someone turns up with an offer like 200 grand, say, and you have to say, is this good or not? We actually know what's good or not because we've actually decided what the numbers are without the pressure of a bid being in front of us.
So every player does have his price.
Yep. Even you, Steve. We've got a price for you.
Nick, people will be more worried about Danny Johnson's price than my price, to be honest.
Yeah, well, that's quite high.
Good.
Nigel, we've got enough time for just a couple more questions. Jamie, I'm going to come over to yourself.
OK, just a quick one. Do you think that a European Super League that undermines a Premier League would eventually have a big impact on our finance in regards to less TV money in the future?
I think a enhanced form of Europe, whether you call it a league or a championship or whatever, it's going to happen. I think there's going to be a more closer alliance between the Premier League and the EFL. I think that will come out of the Boston Consulting Group report. I think the Premier League inevitably is going to shrink in size. And I think Project Big Picture, which I know got bashed by a lot of people, had a lot of good ideas in it. The key for us, and remember, at the end of the day, I'm only really interested in Leighton Orient, is that we need a bigger share of the media rights, which was offered back in 1995. I think that will happen. And again, I am more optimistic now about the future of football. And to add fuel to the fire, so to speak, I think we will look back in 3 years' time and say the pandemic was really good for football.
Ironic, really, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it is, because it's made everyone think about finances, how clubs are run. I mean, football has so many nonsenses. I mean, the lack of a salary cap, the fact that we play 30 games a year in the stadium, so we don't focus on non-match day revenue that Danny Macklin was doing a great job on and would have done an even better job this year. So, and then the fact that the media rights of the EFL aren't effectively capitalized on. The fact that we can't see the highlights of the EFL here in America is ridiculous. The fact that a lot of games are shown on ESPN Plus, which is really a streaming service rather than TV. And the FA Cup, we can't see the FA Cup over here unless you go on ESPN Plus. It's nonsense. So a lot of work needs to be done to really get the media rights taken around the world and monetized.
Nigel, thank you ever so much for your time tonight. We really, really appreciate it. All the best and stay safe.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks to all our fans. And I think we had a record streaming number last Saturday. Sorry we had a defeat. But I encourage everyone to watch the game this week, which I think is going to be an interesting one. And thank you for all your support and your loyalty. And any ideas to help give season ticket holders even more back for what they've invested would be welcome from anyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nigel. Cheers. Thank you. Bye-bye. So thank you ever so much to Nigel for coming onto the show. Nigel, we really, really appreciate your time and hopefully we'll get to speak to you again soon. So before we go, let's look ahead to the Bolton game then and let's just have a little bit of a chat about what we think we should go with starting lineup-wise. Now, I jotted down a few different starting lineups and what have you and stuff, and my initial thoughts were obviously that we would go with a 4-3-3, and if it was me, I would bring in Freeman and Kemp for Cissé an angle with Soteriou up top and Kemp and Wilkinson either side, and then Coulson in for Happy. But then I started to think to myself, should we go with a 4-4-2 with Freeman and Clay in the middle, with Kemp wide one side, Joby wide the other side, Soteriou and Wilkinson up front? What do we think, gentlemen?
I think we're going to start with a 4-3-3. I think it's Ross's preferred formation. Interesting you said about Cissé. Didn't have the greatest game on Saturday, I thought. Maybe a chance for Kyprianou to come in.
Right, OK.
I really think that Kyprianou might actually have a case of starting that game. Like we said earlier, I think they'll keep Brophy at left back and Kemp will get a start. Interesting to see who starts up front. I hope that Soteriou starts up front, but I've got a funny feeling Connor Wilkinson might start up front this time.
OK, Steve.
I don't think we see a 4-4-2, not unless Ross suddenly has one of those epiphanies in the middle of the night or something.
would you play a 4-4-2 then, I suppose, is the question?
Well, it's irrelevant, really. I would have liked to see it at some stage, but I think we've gone beyond it, to be honest. I mean, he's changed. The one change he's made the whole season is when we tried the three at the back, wasn't it? And that didn't work either. Hector Kyprianou must be jumpy at the bit and probably deserves his chance. I don't know how many more chances he can give Cissé. I thought Cissé was poor for that goal again on Saturday. We got outnumbered, but we wouldn't have been outnumbered if Cissé had got back quickly enough. Kyprianou does in many ways deserve a chance. Whether this is the game to give it to him is another matter. I wouldn't mind Joe Widdowson coming in at fullback because he's played a lot with Josh Coulson. I don't think that would be a problem, and he'd be another one desperate to prove himself. But it's probably more likely, again, that Ross will stick with Brophy at fullback. And as I say, I think Ruul Soteriou probably deserves that chance to play through the middle in his best position. And Freeman probably as a sub to get on again. And it really would be good to see what he and Dan Kemp in particular can do for us.
I'd really like to see Freeman, Joby and Dan Kemp all in the same side. I think that's an attacking three that gives you a hell of a lot of options there. And again, and you know, a lot of creativity. Do we think that Ross might be a bit worried about fitness? Obviously, you know, Joby's played a lot of games this season so far. We know that Kemp and Freeman aren't necessarily fully fit. Neither is Ruul Soteriou. So do you think maybe that that's going to play an make an impact in Ross's decisions, do we think, Jamie?
Yeah, probably will do. Probably not for the Bolton game, but maybe the Crawley match. I think you might see it shuffle around a bit then. You might see a start for the new guys. So
The only thing I'm worried about Ross at the moment, the only thing I'm worried about Ross at the moment is people are going to get going to work us out now. You know, we're going into the second round of matches. We've come against Bolton. We've played, came up against Forest Green the other day, and they know the way we're going to play. They know our big threat is that diagonal ball to Wilkinson cutting in, and they're going to set up to stop that. You know, yeah. And I think that at some point that Ross's hand, you know, if we start losing a few games, he's going to have to make some changes in his tactics. And we'll see how good the squad is then.
Steve, let's leave the last word with you.
Well, tough game despite the difficult season that Bolton have had. They've conceded a lot of goals. 37, is it, that they've let in, I think. A couple of good strikers in Owen Doyle and Delfinesco up front. Another team are on a bad run, but that never seems to help us. So a tricky one, and then Crawley away to come as well. So very important week coming up.
Yeah. Yeah, and let's hope we don't pick up any more injuries as well, because that could well be a disaster and derail the rest of the season. All right, gentlemen, thank you ever so much for your time tonight. We'd like to give our thanks to Nigel Travis and Luke Lamborn for setting up the interview, Karen Harrison for her post-production work. Remember to buy your streaming passes for the Bolton game this Saturday, when hopefully we shall see us return to winning ways. All the best, everybody. Up the O's, and we'll see you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
Well, my thanks to Billy and crew for bedding us out this week and setting up the Zoom call, etc., and making a show possible. We'll catch you again next week, folks.
It's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. This is St. Upton Park. It's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10. Till the end. If I thought you'd score, but I haven't seen a goal in God knows when. And I wanna hear rocking all over the world again. Cause this ain't Upton Park, it's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all. It's St. Upton Park, it's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you go, we're rocking all over the world again. Yeah, you go, we're rocking all over the world again. Yeah, you go.
on the hour across Brentwood and Billericay. This is